This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting windroserecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Kayla Clark, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. First time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry. This is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 118 for April 13th, 2021, featuring writer, blogger, playwright named Kayla Clark. On this day in 1861, after 34 hours of bombardment, the Union-held Fort Sumter surrendered to the Confederates. Then in 1864, Union forces under General William Tecumseh Sherman began their march through Georgia. In 1902, J.C. Penney opened his first store in Kemmerer, Wyoming. In 1933, the first flight over Mount Everest was completed by Lord Clydesdale. In 1941, German troops captured Belgrade. In 1943, Franklin Delano Roosevelt dedicated the Jefferson Memorial. In 1960, the first navigational satellite was launched into Earth's orbit. In 1961, the UN General Assembly condemned South Africa because of apartheid. In 1964, Sidney Poitier became the first black person to win an Oscar for Best Actor. In 1970, an oxygen tank exploded on Apollo 13, preventing a planned moon landing and jeopardizing the lives of three men on the crew. In 1976, the U.S. Federal Reserve began issuing $2 bicentennial notes. And in 1979, the world's longest doubles ping pong match ended after 101 hours. So, Kayla is just full of creative energy and also has like a really calm disposition, which comes across clearly in this episode. I appreciated our conversation a lot because we touch on some themes around recovery from substance use disorders that come up for people in long-term recovery and can be sort of difficult things to navigate. So I think you're going to enjoy it. Like I said, we talk about what it's like to be in long-term recovery. We talk about writing, journalism, and just had a lot of fun. So I hope you enjoy it. Kayla Clark.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eyes.
Take yourself a summer holiday. To talk to you, it's like we've kind of known each other, but haven't really ever gotten a chance to have a conversation like this. So I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So first of all, you're a super creative person and I really have a deep admiration for creative people and am attracted to creative people. But so you and I met at a, do you remember?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I had this job in the south part of Palm Beach County at this little men's facility. And I would go to eat lunch in this restaurant with these guys like every single day. And at the time, it's crazy. I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, eating pancakes and fried eggs for lunch every day for the longest time until after a while I was like, what the hell am I doing eating lunch like this every day? This is crazy. So, but yeah, but you were working there.
Yeah. And Sandy's.
Yeah. Which is a really, one of the things I don't love about South Florida is there aren't more places like Sandy's. Mm-hmm. Like where I grew up in the Midwest, there are lots of little places where you go in there and everybody kind of knows each other and people have their routine and there's a warmth to it. But, you know, you were working there and what else were you doing at the time?
At the time, I was writing for a male trauma treatment center. So I was doing that during the week, and then I was at Sandy's Diner Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after some time, you just kind of decided you were going to pick up and leave and go wander, right?
Yeah. So I actually purchased a house in Southern Florida, anticipating staying there for, you know, maybe the remainder of my life. And then my dad was diagnosed with colon cancer, and my parents are also creatives. They don't have health insurance, aka, so, or very, very bad health insurance. So I ended up selling the house to help pay for his treatment. And in that moment, I was kind of just like, well, I guess it's time for a major change of plans. And I packed up my car and just left, not sure where I was going to end up.
Mm. And now, you're not from South Florida. You ended up in South Florida for the same reason I did.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I have noticed about you that I liked is that, well, first of all, we got to talk about your cartoons at some point, which I don't know. I started seeing these cartoons that you do on Instagram where, in a lot of cases, you're kind of poking fun at the sort of cliche, concepts around early recovery in South Florida. And, for people who don't know, Palm Beach County is a place where there's a lot of addiction treatment, and people have converged on this community to get help for decades at this point. And it really kind of blew up in the late, well, I guess 2006 through 15. It got really, really crazy. And where, you know, when I came down here in the late 90s, it was like there were a few places, but they were all really, really great. It wasn't like that anymore by, you know, 2010. Things have changed an awful lot. But so Delray Beach specifically is this community where a lot of people come to get sober. And I really loved how you kind of made fun of the vape guys and, you know, all the all the stuff that you know, these people kind of fall into, this little subculture, which really isn't that cool, you know. To me, like, it misses the point of, to me, like, to be sober, it was never about becoming part of some subculture. It was about giving me the ability to go out and live my life and be whatever I wanted to be, not to be confined to some bubble, you know. So you have all these characters, and what was that about? Where'd that come from?
I guess I've always been a pretty sardonic person. And I mean, in that, like you said, in that subculture, there's just quite a lot to make fun of, right? I mean, like, it's, I was just not, never exposed to anything like that before coming to Delray Beach. And, you know, I think my way of like coping with things too sometimes is just tearing them to pieces.
Well, you crushed it with that stuff. So, so you grew up in California, right?
I did. Yeah. Southern California.
What part?
I was born and raised in Santa Barbara, and I lived in LA for a while. I went to school there.
And what'd you study?
I studied playwriting.
Yeah. So you have that bug too, right? Are you working on any productions right now? Or, well, I guess the pandemic has kind of hamstringed you there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The pandemic has put a hamper on everything theater related, but I did manage to put on a few original plays while I was in Oregon, so that was nice. And I'm looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah. So what attracted you to that type of writing? Have you just always loved theater?
So I actually did TV acting when I was young, like between the ages of 4 and about 15. I did a lot of commercial acting, and I was on that side of things. And so I was always on stage. And then in high school, I took a playwriting class, and I just fell in love with it. And ended up entering a contest when I was 17, and I had a play produced in LA, and that was just life changing for me.
After you that, wrote a play at 17 that was produced in LA?
Yes, as part of a contest.
Right. But still, that's huge.
Yeah, it was definitely a very impactful experience for me.
So then you went to school for that, and then, you know, what happened after that? Where'd you end up after that? Because you've had some twists and turns, right? Like most of us.
I think the few years between, or maybe couple years between graduating and winding up in Florida, are just a hot mess. I can't really tell you exactly where I was. I was bouncing between LA and Santa Barbara, which is where I was born, and kind of just woke up in Florida one day. So after graduation, things kind of spiraled for me a bit.
Yeah. But then, so had you had any other experience with recovery or attempts at recovery before you came down here?
Yes, actually. My parents stuck me in rehab when I was 21, which I thought was ridiculous because I was 21.
Right.
And I ended up, it was in Costa Mesa, California. So I was there for 30 days and then I went back to school. And I definitely didn't take it seriously or think I had a problem. I had fun dressing up for AA meetings and, you know, hanging out with the girls by the pool. But at that point, I certainly wasn't serious about recovery.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it took a couple more lumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took, you know, me waking up in a psych ward and then subsequently waking up in Florida with no idea how I got there. And then, you know, after I got to Florida, it was a wild ride for a little bit.
Was it?
And then I finally found my footing. Yeah.
Okay. So how old were you when it finally stuck?
Oof. I was maybe 24, 25.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you think made the difference? What was it that you had to kind of figure out before you settled into it?
I'm not sure exactly when it clicked for me. I think I finally found a sponsor that I could actually relate to. And I just took an honest look at myself and what I was doing. Which was, you know, hiding like gas station wine in my closet because my roommates were also sober or were sober, not also, but were sober. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a no drugs or alcohol house. So I was hiding wine. And yeah, I think I just did like a little honest self-reflection and I was like, no, this is not a sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, and I know for me, I guess I had to experience enough pain.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be uncomfortable enough for me to actually want to change.
Right.
And what you're talking about, like living a life where you're hiding your drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there aren't many more painful things than that I have been through. Cause you know, I mean, there was this one period, maybe 4 or 5 months before I ended up going to treatment where I was hiding my drinking and I wasn't doing it out in public and, you know, but I like actually had myself convinced I wasn't really drinking and mm-hmm. I was talking like I was a sober guy, you know, I mean, it yeah. was just crazy, but inside I was just such a mess. It hurt so bad mm-hmm. to live a lie like that. And to me, that's like really the gift of, or one of the many, many gifts of being in sobriety is that, you know, I don't have to live a lie. I don't have to be in that sort of agony anymore. And it really, it's a type of suffering that, I don't know, maybe is unique to people who go through stuff like this, have addiction issues.
Because
it's really a weird thing. I mean, you think about that, like pretending to be sober and hiding, like you said, gas station wine in the closet. I mean, and here you are. What, 23, 24 years old? I mean,
right, yeah.
That is crazy, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
And then talk a little bit about what it's been like since you did cross that threshold.
I mean, life has improved dramatically, of course. I currently have an interesting relationship with AA and recovery. So I was sober for 3.5 years, heavily, heavily involved in the program when I was in Florida. And then I went on a trip by myself for the first time. I decided to go to Vermont and rent a cabin for a few weeks and just isolate myself and focus on writing. And I kind of went a little bit crazy because I was so much more isolated than I anticipated on being.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't making meetings and, you know, I had like the voices of AA members in my head saying, like, if you don't make meetings, you're going to drink. And so I kind of convinced myself that I was going to drink no matter what, because, you know, I had to be on shaky footing, right? Because I wasn't going to meetings and I had poor cell reception. So I wasn't in contact with my sponsor on a daily basis. So my time in that cabin, it was basically just a big mind fuck. I mean, I convinced myself that I was going to drink. And so I bought a bottle of wine and I was about to drink it, but I realized I had this big kind of, I guess it was like a spiritual experience where I realized I just didn't want to, you know, I felt more like I had to because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. But in that moment, I was like, oh, holy shit, I don't want to drink. And for me, that was like, you know, a big eye opener. And then when I came back, I got ostracized. I felt a little bit for getting so close. And, you know, I was told maybe I wasn't as stable in my sobriety as I thought I was. But for me, it was like, no, isn't this the whole point, you know, to be standing on the precipice and then to be like, oh, wow, it's working. I don't want to drink. So that was something that took me a really long time to process. And during that time, I kind of just separated myself from the recovery scene and did my own thing, which was a lot of travel.
And have you reconciled that at this point?
You know what? It's been a process. Right now, I would say, I mean, I'm in recovery, but I'm not currently working any kind of program. I do yoga almost daily. I meditate, and I've kind of found what works for me. And, you know, it's not something that I'm shying away from completely or that I've turned my back on. I just feel like I went on my own personal journey and it led me to this lifestyle, if that makes sense.
And you're happy?
I am. Yes. I'm happy. I'm, you know, functional and genuinely happy, I think, for the first time in a long time. I think I thought I was happy when I was in Florida, and I was, I mean, for the most part, but I was still involved in a really toxic relationship that ate up a lot of my emotional energy. And it's hard to be completely authentically happy when I guess I was still dealing with codependency issues for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is this phenomenon of being active in the 12-step community where there's this pressure of if you don't follow this formula, then you're going to fail. And there's like a lot of shame around it. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I think being somebody who, I mean, I feel really lucky that I started my career in the treatment industry at this facility. It was a Hazelden facility at the time, and had like world-class mentorship and training. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I caught on to right away is that the leaders were really good about remembering that clients are human beings with families and lives and dreams, and they weren't as caught up in the dogmatic part of it where, well, you know, he's not doing this, so we really need to kick him out, or, you know, it's like, I mean, some of these, and what happens a lot of times is that in these facilities, there's this presumption that if you don't do it the way that I did it, then you're not doing it right. You're not going to get better. You're not. And really, that's pretty arrogant, you know, to think that, or for me to project that onto someone. But it's taken me also being somebody in a 12-step program and working through all that stuff myself and believing all those things myself, and then feeling the shame of straying away from going to meetings every day. And, you know, it is a mind fuck sometimes. But also, like, the longer I'm sober, the more I realize, you know, what do I know? Like, how am I to tell you what's going to work for you? And, you know, like you mentioned yoga. Since I started practicing yoga, you know, it's interesting because I was in this serious relationship when I was 5 years sober, I guess. I was with this woman for a few years. We lived together and eventually went our separate ways. And then I heard she kind of wasn't doing well and didn't see her for years and years. Didn't hear anything about her for years and years. And I'm in a yoga class one morning and she scurries in at the last minute and drops her mat down and she didn't see me. But the next thing you know, we start running into each other and she's a teacher there. And this is someone who had years of recovery at different times and, you know, was in and out for off and on for probably the better part of 15 years, but got it with yoga. Yoga is what really resonated with her and made her feel connected. And now she's a mom and is married and, like, it's, you know, it's not the story you would hear in a 12-step meeting, but, you know, if you read the literature, they're pretty clear about, we don't have the corner on this market. This is what has worked for us. There are other things that have worked for other people. And, yeah, I think, and also, as someone who works with a lot of young guys, I avoid 12-step jargon when I'm doing group work or, you know, even working one-on-one with people, especially with young people, because, you know, you're talking about like a 22-year-old kid who is in substance abuse treatment or maybe a halfway house, and nobody ever chooses to do that. Nobody ever really wants to do that. You know, it's a complete disruption of one's life. But, you know, there's this, like, you know, they're trading the frat house for AA. Like, that is not inviting to a young man. Right? Like, so all the jargon and the slogans and all that stuff, like, they don't want to hear that shit. It's just a reminder of what they've lost.
Right.
And I've always tried to be, I think I've been able to be aware of it because I got sober so young, and just kind of knew, but yeah, there are, I think as an industry, you know, people doing what I do, we have to do a better job of having our arms wide open and not judging people. And, you know, I really believe at the end of the day, we have what it takes to heal ourselves. Like, we know what we need if we really get tuned into it and do it. And if we're true to ourselves. And, you know, I'm not knocking any of the other stuff. I mean, like, the 12-step work saved my life.
Right.
And I love it. But, you know, what do you do if you can't get somebody to go to a meeting? Does that mean you give up on them? I don't think so, you know? Anyway, so yeah. So you, that's interesting. And I appreciate you talking about that because it's the shame around it. It's a hard thing to talk about.
Oh yeah.
It is. Like, one of the things that I had a hard time with for a long time is I didn't really sponsor guys, you know, and I did some. I got into a stretch relatively early on in sobriety where I was sponsoring guys and beginning to take them through the steps, and usually they'd do a fifth step and disappear. That's basically what happened. Right. And then I didn't have anybody for a long time. And then a few years ago, I got a few guys all at once, like two or three guys all at once, but they were guys who had been around a while and were beginning to experience dysfunction in their personal relationships. Mm. And it, you know, what I've learned over the years is I'm just not the guy who takes you through the steps in the beginning. I'm the guy that you come to a few years later when you're driving yourself crazy with, you know, you're in a crazy relationship or, and you're trying to figure all that kind of stuff out. That's my wheelhouse, you know? Mm-hmm. And there is a place for all of us. We don't all have to be the same about how we do this stuff. The point is showing up and being of service and helping people, giving to people, you know, mm-hmm. treating people with love.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right. So now you're in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes, I am.
So what are you doing in Asheville?
Oof, way too much. So I've been doing recovery writing since I left Florida. So I do that full-time remotely still, which is awesome.
So when you say recovery writing, what do you mean?
Mostly just articles and blogs for treatment centers. So it's all recovery-based writing. And I think some of it is more, I guess, I don't know, because, you know, there's all the keyword stuffing and there is kind of that shady aspect of it. So I do sell my soul a little bit, but then I have a couple clients who I write for and people actually read the articles and I can write what I want. And that's, I think, still a big part of my recovery is mm-hmm. being able to do that on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, and I get what you're saying about, and I hate to hear you talk about it as selling your soul, but I kind of feel the same way. And it's not even about the recovery thing for me. It's about, I don't want to write for keywords. Right. You know, it's, yeah. I want to write. I don't want to like have my, you know, my diction be determined by, you know, using a certain word a certain number of times. And so to be able to be proud of what I've written mm-hmm. and have it be something that will, you know, drive, will be optimized for search engines. You know, it's a difficult thing to accomplish. And so one of the things I've done is kind of compartmentalized that, like for this podcast, mm-hmm. like I have blog stuff that I write that's like commentary, like essay sort of stuff. And I try not to optimize that unless like it's really easy to do. It just makes sense, you know, and it doesn't compromise the quality of the writing in my mind. But then I have like the show notes for the episodes. Those are just, you know, boilerplate stuff. And so that kind of stuff, I don't worry about, you know, it's not like some piece of writing I'm going to be attached to anyway, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So that's something that I've had a hard time with all along. You know, ever since the advent of the internet, really, you know, and I say that as, you know, in high school, I was on the staff of this newspaper that I was just lucky. We had a really great journalism program, and it was the late 80s or early 90s. And like, we were the only, some kids had access to computers, but like we had Macs, you know, back then, which were like nobody had a computer with a mouse, but I had access to one. And actually, you know, typeset everything we wrote, and actually had to, you know, do paste up work, like build the page out of paper that was, you know, I mean, So like, then the internet came, and there, it really has been like the wild, wild west. And what has driven me crazy is that the quality of the writing in general is so poor.
Oh, it's so poor.
that it's just ridiculous. And it has, it's gotten better since mainstream media has had to adapt to social media, I think. Right. But there still are a gazillion bloggers out there who don't know the difference between there, and there. You know what I mean? Like,
it's so painful, yeah.
It is. It really, it's difficult to see. It especially drives me crazy. Like, there's one guy who's a little bit of an industry leader who, every time he posts something, it is just one long run on sentence.
Oof.
And it's like, are you serious? Like you're the face of this shit down here. Like, you can't even like have somebody read this for you and punctuate it before you. Like, yeah. It just, and really, you don't know how to use a comma or a period. Oh my God. I can see forming contractions is a little more complicated. I can see where people, like, you know, I tuned out math at a certain point, right? I could see where people would do that with grammar at a certain point, but, you know, it's okay to use a period.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Drives me crazy. So, but also I have to say it's always come relatively easy to me too. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't really had a hard time with it. If there's, I know enough about grammar and usage that if there's something I question whether I have it right or not, I either look it up or just do something different so that I don't risk having a mistake. But, yeah. And, you know, seeing, I remember like only knowing you as the waitress at Sandy's, connecting the dots that you were doing the blog work for that treatment facility with whom I had a relationship, was working with a lot of their clients, and I saw what good work they were doing and really admired it. And then read the stuff you were writing, which was like actually worth reading and substantive, like unlike, you know, most blogs are just junk to drive traffic. That's what they are. Right. But the stuff you wrote was really good.
Thanks. So
I think that's when I realized you wrote as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so what's on the horizon for you? Do you have any big plans, big projects?
I mean, nothing major. I did, when I lived in Bend, Oregon, I got into journalism and I wrote for the Independent Weekly there for about a year before I moved. And, as soon as I got here, I applied to write for the Independent Weekly, and I didn't hear back until a few days ago. I guess they were figuring out some federal funding stuff, but I'm going to be doing that. I have my first story, that's going to be published in early April. So
what's it about?
Oh man, I couldn't tell you.
You don't know yet?
Well, I did get the email that covers what it's about. It's some really involved irrigation story, something to do with a lawsuit, something that I'm not interested in. So I don't have it locked in my memory.
That's okay. I've never really written for a weekly like that. Mm-hmm. I've written for dailies, but, it's the, that, you know, it's a whole different sort of, you know, the deadline structure and all that stuff and what you can cover and at what length and all that. It's just a different sort of animal, but you like it.
I do. Yeah. I liked what I was doing in Bend. I was doing a lot of the food coverage, which was great because I could go out to eat and I was reimbursed.
Oh, that's cool.
I was doing culture, which I'm passionate about. And so everything I was doing, I was pretty passionate about. This is going to be interesting because they're just kind of throwing me in where I'm needed. So it'll definitely be a challenge. And then, yes, with the deadlines, it's a whole new element of pressure that I did get used to, but then I got comfortable not answering to anybody. So we'll see.
Well, my experience with that, I covered high school sports for the daily paper where I grew up, which published in the afternoons, except for on the weekends. So, you know, I'd cover a football game or something and then have to go back to the paper. And, you know, deadline would be like 11 o'clock or something that night. And, you know, usually it was a matter of maybe 15 minutes that, you know, I would have to actually sit down and write. I mean, you know, if you can't write, I mean, you can't do that, you know, but, you know, when you've written journalistically, you know, if you do, you know, if you're taking notes, if you're getting quotes, if you're paying attention, the story kind of writes itself. And then it's just a matter of like putting the puzzle pieces together.
Right.
So I'm, at least that's the way it worked for me. And, but you know, what'll happen is that you'll publish a couple things and they'll see what a good writer you are. And then you'll start getting better assignments and you'll get to write about the things that you want to write about. That's what'll happen.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
We can help.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, when I came down here, eventually I got a contract with the Post and, you know, if you don't know about Palm Beach County, it's like one of the largest counties in the country. And football's pretty big down here, you know, and but they would send me out like Belgrade and, you know, Pahokee and Moorhaven and all these way out in the middle of the state. And it would take me forever to get back. And then, you know, they didn't pay mileage and they actually paid less here than they did in Indiana, which I thought was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and it was just like, no, also like no personal relationship with the editorial staff. Like it was just like, okay, this is too much. By that time I was like sober long enough where I was beginning to start to get a normal social life and like, I don't need this on Friday nights, you know, this $25 for, traipsing all over the state, you know, but it was good because I felt like, you know, that's a pretty good paper, you know, for me to, it was a milestone in my recovery to be able to go somewhere else and do that and get that byline. And what I would really like to do is, I would cover baseball if they wanted to use me for that. I would love to do that because it's just such a different experience, a baseball game as opposed to football or basketball or something. And, you know, I would enjoy it. But anyway, we're here to talk about you. So so you're writing for the weekly there. And and anything else? What about theatrical stuff? What do you have manuscripts you're working on or anything like that?
I don't have any new plays right now, which is unusual for me. I think right now I'm just doing so much writing work that, you know, for fun writing has kind of taken the back burner. I also got a pandemic job, which is what I've heard them called, just to get out of the house. So I'm working at a consignment boutique,
Is
my first retail job at 30. So it's interesting. It's definitely time consuming. So I'm trying to juggle everything right now and, you know, find time for myself.
Yeah.
Which.
Well, we reconnected a few weeks ago. I get this message from you out of the blue on Facebook Messenger with this photograph of a sign that says, ask for Tom Gentry. And you were really nice to pick that up and ship it to me. Thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah, I had to.
Yeah, and it's funny because it must be like what I imagine it is, the colors and everything. It must have been like, you know, the realtor signs where Century 21, and then it'll have the name of the realtor hanging down on another little sign. I think that's what it is. I think it's from a Century 21 sign.
Okay.
But it's pretty cool. I still haven't figured out where I'm going to hang it yet. But now, looking back on this series of years that you've gone through, from California to Florida to Oregon to North Carolina and the whole recovery thing and all that, looking back on all that, if there was a time when the younger Kayla needed some support or a word of advice, when would that have been? And what would you say to her?
I definitely think that a lot of my addiction issues stemmed from traumatic experiences that I had when I was younger, when I didn't feel heard or supported. So if I could go back, I would just let myself know that I'm heard and supported.
You know, for me, a lot of that, I feel like addiction for me was a response to my betrayal of self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast about personal authenticity, because ultimately, you know, no matter what 12-step path we go down, or if it's yoga or church or whatever it is, the path leads to ourselves. That's where we heal, by being who we are, you know? But it took me a while to figure that out. And it can be painful too, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for doing this. And
thank you.
I want to have you back on when you have announcements and stuff, when you have projects. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Kayla.
Yeah, thank you.
There you have it, Kayla Clark. So, wherever you listen, whatever platform you use, please subscribe, like, follow, whatever it is they let you do. You can find the show on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, and I generally post the episodes that come out on Tuesday. I post them the following Sunday on YouTube. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to leave a review or rating or both, preferably on Apple Podcasts. If you don't have an Apple device, Podchaser is where it might do the most help to leave a review, but anywhere you can do it, if they give you the opportunity, please do. Every little bit helps. If you know someone who would like this episode or another episode, the show in general, please send them a link. If you have questions or comments, you can call 561-247-4757 to leave a message. Love to hear from you, value any feedback you have. For early access to the newest episodes, as well as unedited interviews, you can support the show on Patreon for as little as $1 a month.
you can gain access to supplemental content for a limited period of time. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera for use of their music that you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. I want to thank our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery. Thank you to Wendy Chin from Equivox for providing digital support. And The Path to Authenticity is proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. You can visit the show at thepathtoauthenticity.com. Email us at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Have plenty of playlists on Spotify. You can find links in the show notes. I'm also beginning to dabble with Clubhouse, and I'm probably going to start. What I'm going to try to do is, as I interview people, use that platform to record so you can listen in live if you're on Clubhouse to the interview itself. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well, enjoying your spring. As I record this, it's just after noon on Saturday. I'm going to go lay by the pool a little bit and read some Flannery O'Connor. So, have a great week. Be nice.
Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.